Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello. Welcome to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic and my name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence followed by a serenity prayer.
Accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Okay. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from an illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from an illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening we are discussing the first half of step 12. Please welcome our panel this evening. So, God's in charge and has a sense of humor, and so Mickey's on his way from Virginia Beach, and so at the last 30 seconds, Evan has graciously stepped in, and we're going to invite Mickey to join us from when he gets here, and then, of course, Leanne is also here on the table with us tonight. So thank you, Pam.
Thank you.
All right, so we did break the 12-step up into two parts, into 2 weeks, because there's a lot in the book about it. And so I think we have about six readings tonight, and the first paragraph is on page 89. And step 12 is, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So page 89, we're going to start with, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives.
Leanne, did you want to start?
Sure. My name's Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Leanne.
I'd like to welcome you if you're new or you haven't been in this meeting before. This is my home group, and it's good to have everybody here tonight. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 31 years old, And I really wanted people to get off my back. I couldn't seem to go without drinking. That was my problem. I didn't know that was my problem when I got here. I thought my problem was the other people and that people wouldn't quit telling me, you know, this is ridiculous, what's going on, you know, why are you drinking so much, or you didn't drink very much and why are you drunk? And it was because I was hiding the booze somewhere else in the house. And so that's what I brought here. And y'all scooped me up at my very first meeting, and I heard the truth for the first time in my life from another alcoholic that talked about how they drank like I did. And for me, that was the first time I could really relate, because the people that I hung out with and when I would talk, I didn't talk about the night before and not remembering. I didn't talk about, you know, how did we get home, because I may have driven and that wouldn't look good. So y'all were sharing those stories, and I thought, oh my God, these people drink like I do, and they're talking about it, and they're sober, I thought. I wasn't sure, but because that very first meeting was a step study, they were on step one, and so, you know, and people were talking about how they weren't drinking anymore, and I wasn't sure whether to believe them or not, and after the meeting, I was like, how do you do this? And they're like, you just keep coming back. Here's the big book. Go home and read it. And so that's what I started to do. But I can tell you that if I hadn't kept coming to meetings and heard that I needed to get a sponsor and that I needed to get a home group and that I needed to work the steps, I would have gone back to drinking. Because I came here in those first, I'll say, 3 months, I was irritable, restless, discontent, without a drink in my hand, and I wanted to kill you. I wanted to kill my husband. I was homicidal. I don't think at that point I was as suicidal, but I do remember riding to a meeting over in Portsmouth. I'm on the interstate, and I thought, if I just take the car and I rear it off the interstate right here, then that might be good. And I really didn't want to kill myself, but I wanted the attention for doing that, because at that point, my home life was a wreck, you know, and my husband and I weren't getting along, and I was craving attention. Like, don't you see what I'm doing? I'm going to meetings every day, you know, blah, 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 poor me, and get off my back. And he wasn't getting off my back because I was a lunatic. But I found peace in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for that hour when I would go and I'd sit in a meeting. And I would go at noon, and then sometimes I would go again at night. And I got a sponsor, and then she started giving me suggestions. Like, I went and got a part-time job, and I could work 2 days a week. And then I didn't want to go to meetings on those nights because I'd worked all day. And she said, no, you need to be at meetings. You know, I needed to hear the message. And then we started meeting and started going through the steps. And then I started getting some relief. It wasn't until, you know, that time. And, you know, for me, it's the same thing when the tables are turned today and I'm walking through the steps with another alcoholic. You know, all I have is my experience and to share what it was like for me when I got here. And then they've got to make that decision whether they're alcoholic or not. It's a wonderful, it is that bright spot of my life today. I find more peace when I'm working with another alcoholic and we're sitting across the table one-on-one. That's the part that fills that hole inside of me. There's a purpose today, and I want that message. If somebody else is in need, and just like we say in one of our mottos, you know, I always want the hand of AA to be there, and for that I am responsible. I'm at that place today in my sobriety, but it took me a long time to get here, and I might share some of that later, so I'll pass.
All right. Thank you, Leanne. So yeah, just like Leanne, when I was first coming in here, I absolutely was just starting to get into that doomsday prepping thing. That series had come out on television, and I just thought that was wonderful. I thought these guys were getting a head start. They are in the know. They know what's up, because this world is coming apart. And I absolutely, you know, I was collecting gear and stuff. You know, I was in the military. I know what I need to survive out on the lam. And I started getting like these mail outs of like bulk supplies that I could store up. You know, like giant water bladders for my bathtub that I could save like 500 gallons at a time of clean water. You know. And what I couldn't see, and I think this was just absolutely a reflection of how incredibly sick I was at the time. I just knew that life was hopeless. There was no point to living anymore. I was still married at the time. I had kids, two beautiful kids, healthy kids. No problems there. But at that point, everything just was lackluster in life. There was nothing I could do, no pieces I could rearrange to get the same feeling right. I just never felt like this was it. And I just had this like this sad epiphany that I'm going to have to drink for the rest of my life to get through this. And I'm only 33, and I just knew I was going to live a long time. And that just, I mean, that just is horrible. I mean, that's like hell on earth, man. Tell me that I'm going to die from this thing soon, and at least offer me a little peace of mind. But that's what it was. I was using my broken mind to judge the rest of the world, and for a long time, alcohol set that straight. And I think for the last 5 years of my drinking, alcohol stopped doing for me what it used to do, which is offer me any kind of ease and comfort. You know, that sense of ease and comfort that it used to relieve the rest of the world from me. And my entire adult life, you know, I drank. I learned very early on that drinking relieved the world from me, or vice versa, relieved me from the world, you know, took it off my shoulders. It was absolutely a burden to bear. And when I never came in here voluntarily. I got pulled in here kicking and screaming every single time. I think I look at today, I see that as God's grace being brought in here. The first time, you know, I came around, I heard what you guys were saying a little bit. I was at least willing, you know, like we said, willingness being the key. That's all I needed is just that 1% to get my foot in the door and to get that door open. And I can tell you, I was only ready to hear what I was ready to hear at that time. But apparently it was just enough to keep me around for about 4 or 5 months. And I was working on 1 through 3, not a whole lot of work to be done there. Maybe the work and a decision, maybe a lot of figuring out, if you consider that work. I had a lot of figuring it out to do. And what that looked like is I had to go back out. That part in the big book about the heavy drinker got real good to me. So I was like, all right, thank you, AA, for waking me up. I know now that I'm just a heavy drinker. That was my wake-up call. Thanks. So sorry. You guys have to do this for the rest of your life and, you know, spend multiple nights a week, you know, giving an hour here or there thinking of others. But I'm just going to go off and do this on my own. You know, I had 4 or 5 months, so I saw how sobriety made me feel better, made me a little more use at home, and so I was just going to go stay sober, and I can tell you that it didn't work, and I had to go drink over step one. I had an honesty issue. I couldn't see that I was powerless over alcohol, or that my life was unmanageable with or without alcohol, You know, I got drugged back in. You know, I had a big blowout. I didn't believe in God at the time, but I said something like a prayer. I knew that I'd missed out on something by stepping out of AA, and I couldn't bring myself back into these rooms on my own. So I was just like, man, I wish something would happen to drag me back into AA. And I just kind of had that floating around in my head a few times, and finally I had a big one last hurrah. One big getting smashed up drunk, you know, going tearing down Norfolk, attacking a few of the emergency rooms in town and getting kicked out of a few and punching some holes in the wall type of drunk. And And that's what I did. And I came in here originally. I don't care what your motives are to come in here, you know. My motives were to save my marriage. And I came in here with those motives. And I got woken up because of that. But being sold on step one, I was able to make a start. And my sponsor welcomed me back, because that's what we do with anyone who wants to stop drinking. And so I made it through these steps. And what I know today are steps 1 through 11 are really just trying to straighten me out so that I can get to this step right here, so that I could be working with some other man who is absolutely feeling just like I was, that life is hopeless, because they don't know what their problem is and they don't think there's a solution to it. You know, I think the steps are here to make me feel better. You know, I get caught up in that a lot. But step one through 11 just gets that channel clear with my higher power, gets me introduced to a higher power, and gets me straightened out so that I can turn my attention to intensive work with others. That looks like a promise to me. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much as ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Carry this message to other alcoholics. And, you know, it told us, we learned earlier that we're uniquely qualified to help other drunks, you know, the ex-problem drinker who's found the solution, who's properly armed with the facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. I don't know what that is, but the medical community couldn't get me. The self-help books couldn't get me. The psychologist couldn't fix me. Even religious stuff couldn't fix me. The spiritual angle couldn't fix me, because I didn't know the right way of seeking that higher power, and you guys taught me how to do that. So I come in here with this idea. By the time I get to 12, I'm pretty sure I need to do this, and eventually the want to do this catches up with me. And I have had the honor of carrying this message, whether I wanted to or not in the beginning. I did it a lot in the beginning just because this is what was going to keep me sober. And today I absolutely want to be able to offer that to anyone coming in here suffering. And I've gotten to see men wake up from the position that they're in, you know, that just that misery, that spiritual illness, whatever that is, you know, that you just feel in the pit of whoever you are, that it's hopeless, man. And those steps, by getting active in that and getting active shoulder to shoulder with you guys, man, we start to wake up. And I see that. And that is an incredibly bright spot in my life today. And I hope I get to continue going through that. So I'm going to go ahead and pass on that one. And I don't know.
All right. And I would like to introduce Mickey, because he's here. What we do is we read a paragraph and then we discuss it. So I'm going to read the next paragraph. And it's page 91 on step 12. And it's "See Your Man Alone." "See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your own drinking career up to the time you quit. But say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his." And before we go on, I want to thank Evan for pinching for me. Okay. Leanne, would you like to share on that?
Sure. Turning the talk to some phase of drinking, and that's what my sponsor did with me. As we were getting together, when we first got hooked up, and I started calling her on a daily basis. A lot of our phone calls were, "What's your plan for today?" Because I wasn't working, and I really needed to go over that with her, what I was doing. But then, you know, the talk would turn, you know, to some phase of drinking. You know, there might be something going on with me, or something that she'll bring up. And then we would be sharing experiences. Some of them humorous, not so humorous. At the beginning, probably they were more not humorous than they were. I had a hard time laughing at myself when I first came here. Everything was very serious and doomsday, and you know, just beating myself up with that club of anger that I wished to use on somebody else. And that's for me what I do today. You know, it's, you got to meet people where they are, and every case is going to be different. You know, people that I've worked with in sobriety, some with more years than me, some with less years from me, but you got to meet them for where they are at that time. And I always start at the beginning of the book and go through. You know, for me, it's when I'm talking to somebody and sharing just that utter desperation, loneliness, if they don't have that or don't have that hopelessness, I can't make them have that. That's something that you got to come here with. And I was really grateful for that gift of desperation, because I had no idea how to live. You know, that's what keeps me staying here today. One, working with others, because like Evan was saying earlier, that's that immunity that we get, you know, that first drink. But the other fact is that now I've gone some years without a drink, and I know that insanity will return without a drink. You know, I've got character defects, and if I don't take my inventory and talk with my sponsor about what's going on up here in my head, I'm going to be backslided, and you can't move forward. You're moving forward, and you're moving backward. You can't stand still. And I've tried for years to stand still in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it doesn't serve me well. I always get to that place of complacency, you know, or whatever it is. And I share that, you know, with people that I'm working with. I can't say that everything's hunky-dory since I've been to AA. I've been through some real trials and tribulations. And, you know, having to step up to the plate and be responsible and accountable for my actions on a daily basis is not easy, because I still make mistakes. But I know today, and sharing that with anybody else, that there's hope in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you don't have to drink. You can walk through anything in life and not drink today. And I know that inside, you know, that I know I can't safely drink again, and accepted that, but it's taken a long time. I can't say I got that at 3 months. You know, I didn't get that at 6 months. This has been a process for me that's taken some time, and I don't expect anybody else to get it that quickly either. If you do, that's wonderful, you know, but to let you know it's okay, you know, that I know that the grace of God today has carried me through, and if you really don't want to drink, you don't have to drink today. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, Mickey, you have to get somewhat close to the microphone.
I'm Mickey, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mickey.
First, I would like to apologize for being late. Let me tell you how you can go from having a really calm day to having your hair on fire. My wife got home at 6. She said, "What time do we have to leave?" I said, 7. So it was 6:30, and it dawned on me that I didn't have the address for this. I hadn't looked at the address. So I pulled it up on the meeting list, and it said 7 o'clock. And I was like, it's 17 minutes till. The dogs are outside. My hair went on fire immediately. Anyway, I read over these passages a couple different times while David had sent them to me a couple weeks ago, and my story is that I tried everything that I could to stop drinking before I got to AA. I was so beat up. I had gotten my third DUI. I tried to stay away from. I tried not to drink, but continue to hang out with my same friends. I didn't know anything about AA. And of course, I got drunk again because I didn't fix what was going on the inside. So when I finally came to AA, it was like within my first 30 days, and I heard this gentleman sharing about how much he liked to help people. And he was probably my dad's age. Matter of fact, he was exactly my dad's age. And I was like, bingo, that's going to be my sponsor right there, because he likes to help people. I'm like,
Can't get any easier than that. He already told on himself, right? So I went up to him after the meeting, and I asked him if he would be my sponsor, and he said, he brought me to the side, and he said, let me ask you a couple questions. I was like, okay. And he said, have you ever done this before? I said, no, sir. And he goes, do you think you're going to make it? And I was like, well, I mean, I hope so. And he goes, well, here's the deal. He goes, I'm sponsoring like 7 guys right now. And if you're going to be a real pain in the butt, that's not what the word that he used. He said, this ain't going to work. And I was like, man. And that was my introduction to a sponsor. Now, God gives you what you need when you need it. And kind of what I heard from that guy was this ain't no game. That this is really not a game. And I'm here to tell you that that man was my sponsor for 25 years, and he passed away this past April, and it was heart-wrenching because I know that he saved my life, and he taught me intuitively how to help other people. And so there's a couple things that I wrote down. It's funny that Evan was sitting here and he was reading all that stuff because I wrote down here. Page 18 describes the difference between a man with a real answer who has done the work. Mm-hmm. And really, that's what it is that the man that has done the work can earn he can be uniquely useful when other people can't. And he can usually win the confidence of another alcoholic within a couple hours when other people can't. The other thing that I wrote down was, and I don't know if we read this part yet, but you had mentioned that sounds like a promise. And I wrote down the 12-step promises. It's because, like, I would like to ask somebody, how would you like to have a life that would take on a new meaning? How would you like to watch other people recover? How would you like to see them help others? How would you like to see loneliness vanish? How would you like to see a fellowship grow up about you? How would you like to have a host of friends? Because I didn't have a host of friends when I was drinking. I mean, people were dropping off and telling me to get the hell out of here on a daily basis. I mean, how would you like to have an experience that you wouldn't want to miss? I mean, that sounds like a ride. And it has been. It's been a ride. So I wrote down things like, and this is my opinion, you know, that when a person is ready, you can't say the wrong thing. And when a person's not ready, you can't say the right thing. And that's just my experience. One of the things that I've had to learn over the years is I believe that, like, when people go to church and stuff, sometimes people get stuck on the messenger because sometimes the messenger can deliver a really good message, right? And I've had to learn over the years that the more people that I help, what I do is I sharpen my skills. And I learned how to transfer the message that it's appetizing to a dying man. And that's what it has to be. Like the old saying says, it's not what you say, but how you say it. I have to transfer the... I can't go in there like I'm this egotistical person and think that I'm going to win the confidence of somebody that's going to give me their heart. I have to go in there with my heart to win somebody's heart. Like, I'm no better than anybody else. And the other thing that I was thinking about is that there's definitely a difference. Like, if you go to a treatment center and you're dealing with a person that has the knowledge, but they don't have the heart because they've never been there. There's a huge difference about when I'm trying to help somebody because I've already been where that person is. And I think that the way that Alcoholics Anonymous has laid out the 12 steps is just absolutely phenomenal. And they read in the preamble at the beginning of every meeting. You know, and I think a lot of people miss it, or you just hear it so many times you don't hear it. But it says our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Doesn't say that my primary purpose is to make sure that my wife has everything that she needs. I'm really good at doing my job. It says that my primary purpose is to save another alcoholic. And for that, what I'm given is that daily reprieve in a life that is beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, my life is incredible today compared to when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous so broken, ugly. And it was so normal when I got here. How does that happen? I can't explain to you. Like the most phenomenal things happen in Alcoholics Anonymous that are so simple. Like, for example, when I got a year sober, I couldn't wait to get up there in front of that microphone and tell you exactly how I did it. This year, I'm like so baffled about how it happens. Like, I can't tell you how I did it. It's like, really, I just kind of showed up and God did the rest. Because, like, he carried me so many different times and through so many different trials and tribulations and different paths. It's incredible. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to continue on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to suffer. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
How baffled I was. On a Saturday night, that was my last drunk. I remember coming to, and I didn't remember the night before. I remembered maybe an hour of the party. And next thing you know, I wake up the next morning, it's the same old thing. I'm in the bed, and I'm like, what the heck happened, you know? And my husband kind of sits up and says, either you get help or we're getting a divorce. And it's like, how did that happen again? Like, how did that happen again? Because I had, when it says in the book about how we swore off, I'd probably sworn off, I don't know, 50, 100 times. But that night, I mean, I swore off and I truly meant it, like in the bottom of my heart, like deep down in my gut. I was like, I'm not drinking tonight. And I was confident that I wasn't going to drink. Okay, so we talk about being baffled. I was baffled the next morning. I'm like, holy mackerel. Because I really didn't want to. And so when I came to the meeting and I heard, you know, that mental twist, you know, and how I can't stop, I can't stay stopped. Because I never really, like, stopped, like, said I'm going to stop forever. It was always, I'm just going to take a couple of days off, or I won't drink this weekend. And, you know, towards then, that just never happened. It was a constant, you know, thing. So it was that cycle over and over and over again. And so my sponsor, I remember telling me, you need to read the doctor's opinion. And I talked to her again, and she said, you need to read the doctor's opinion. It was over and over and over again. And I'm telling you, I didn't do that. I was really bad about it. When I came in, the 12 and 12 was a real big thing, and that's kind of where we started. That's different today. I really believe that the steps and solution, if we work them out of the big book, you know, that's where we're going to get sober, stay sober, and be able to carry that message, this message, to the next alcoholic. And so I didn't always do what was suggested or was asked of me. But when I did read the doctor's opinion, and it talked about the obsession of the mind, the allergy of the body, I got it. Just like the book says, you know, if he's a real alcoholic, he will understand you at once. Like, I understood that when I read that in the book. And it had been like that for me for a long time. I mean, I loved alcohol. I craved alcohol. I wanted it all the time from the time I was 13 years old. Anytime I could get it on my hands and in my mouth, that's what I wanted. If I had to steal it, if I had to take it from you, from a parent's liquor cabinet, whatever it was. At 16, my dad had a lock on his liquor cabinet, and I knew where that key was. You know, like, that's not normal, okay? Normal, most people, not alcoholic, the parents aren't going to have to lock up the liquor. So I knew that I was severely afflicted when I got here. I understood that. And that's what I share, you know, with the other people, you know, that I sponsor and I sit down with. We have to have that educational part of that, I believe, to understand what alcoholism is. And then we have to decide for ourselves, can I relate to that? Did I have that phenomenon of craving? You know, did I ever want to stop and couldn't stop? Did I always drink more than I intended? And I knew that I couldn't control my drinking as much as I wanted to. I mean, I had those excuses. I took a trip toward, I think I was, it was probably 2 years before I came in, and for 2 weeks I was at a place and I couldn't drink. You know, I drank on the airplane there and I drank on the airplane back, and I thought, I don't have a problem because I went for 2 weeks without booze, you know? I mean, that's crazy, you know? I mean, and that's what I had to hear when I came here, to say normal people, like that, people who aren't alcoholic don't think like that. You know, they don't have those debacles and the humiliation and incomprehensible demoralization, and then say, you know, okay, I won't do that again. Most of them probably aren't going to do it again, or it might be like a way long way down the road. You know, mine became the next night or the next weekend, you know, over and over and over again. And so that, you know, for me, that hopeless feature of it, that I knew that I couldn't stop on my own. And what I heard when I came here was that with this fellowship, you know, we are powerless over alcohol. You know, if I could relate to this, admit that I'm an alcoholic, that there was a solution and there was help for me. And that's what the steps teach me, you know, that I've got a spiritual problem and y'all have a spiritual solution. And didn't matter if I believe in God, didn't matter what my thoughts are with that, if I would take the action and do what was suggested, that relationship would begin to grow and happen. And that's been my experience. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Am I supposed to say I'm Mickey, I'm an alcoholic?
Yeah. Yeah, just once is good.
When did y'all get here? Sometimes I think that, don't get me wrong, not like I would change like any word in the book or anything like that. But sometimes I think that it's just a little different on occasion, because 12-step calls are not done like all the time because of treatment centers and people coming to the meetings. And most of the time when I get asked to help somebody, or I introduce myself and offer to help somebody, it's somebody that I've met at the meeting. And So it kind of takes on a bit of a different take in the beginning. I don't have to, like, you know, like I ask a person, you know, like, what are you doing here? We all know, you know, I mean, a lot of, you know, well, the reason that I ask that is because, you know, there's definitely a difference between a person that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous because they think they have a problem, or a person that comes here because they have to get their slip signed. So there's the distinguishing factor right there, like how I have to address the issue. Is this person here from the court, or is this person here because they think they might have a problem? And when I'm dealing with a person that thinks that they have a problem, and And I'm going to, you know, I asked them some specific questions. I mean, do you think that you have a problem with alcohol? And, you know, if they're looking for a sponsor and if I'm going to, you know, be somebody's sponsor, I always ask them, are you willing to go to any length? Are you willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? And that's how I start out. And I was reading something in this 12th step today, and I was like, I kind of do something completely opposite of what they're telling you to do. And because it says that you don't want to ask anything of that person. And I always ask somebody in the beginning, and the deal is this. I'm willing to toe this line with you further than you're probably willing to toe it for yourself, but there's one deal. And the deal is that if I walk through these steps with you, you have to promise me at the end that you're willing to give it to somebody else. Because if not, I'm not going to waste my time. And the reason for that is because over the time that I've been here, it has been the people that do not pass it on and keep that thing inside as a selfish little gift are the people that go back out and either kill themselves or use. And it's the people that are trained properly, in my opinion, that have sponsees, that continue to give it away, that live this happy, useful life, that AA just lives and breathes within them. I really don't have that much of a problem showing mental inconsistencies with somebody. You know, like when you say, you know, I knew that I drank too much. I just wasn't sure I was an alcoholic when I got here. You know, I had three DUIs. One was a .27 at the end. And I was thinking to myself, you know you're an alcoholic when you can pass the field sobriety test and still blow a .27. That's a pretty high tolerance level. Some of the things were about, like, missing work because of my drinking. Like, I was never really willing to admit that it was my drinking. And or going to the bar saying, you know, on my way home, that I'm just going to go there and have a couple because I don't really feel good today. And next thing I know, it'd be 2 o'clock. And there was no, if I put alcohol in my body, I just never knew what was going to happen. I never knew where I was going to be. And I really think that, you know, we speak the language of the heart even when we're talking about the way that we were drinking. Because, like, you can't BS an alcoholic. Like, when somebody's telling me their story, I can read right between the lines. And I know that if I'm trying to BS somebody else, they can read right between my lines too. So I need to know that I am armed with the proper facts about myself and that my work has been done, because I cannot transmit anything that I don't have. My sponsor was just, I mean, he was just such an inspirational man. I mean, he was a cancer survivor for 20 years. And I mean, you know, he was sober for 31 or 32 years when he passed. And he just would always say the most simple things. Like, I would always struggle with everything. How long I got to go to these meetings? He'd like, well, how long did you drink? I'm like, 10 years. Well, let's start there. Like, well, when do you know if you got to go to a meeting? Well, there's two times to go to a meeting. When you want to go and when you don't want to go. I'm like, man, this guy, like, has, like, all the answers, you know? Like he's, like, worse than the book. Like, no loopholes whatsoever, right? And but he would always help people. I mean, he always reached his hand out. And I don't know why I remember this, but it hits me like a ton of bricks. I had, like, 90 days of sobriety. And there was this DJ from Los Angeles. And he had about a year at the time when I had 90 days. And he came up to me and he goes, and let me tell you, like, I wasn't angry when I got here. I was like, it was rage. I mean, it was just pure rage because I did not want to. Like, how did I end up here? This guy came up to me and he goes, hey, Mickey, he goes, you know, after 90 days, he goes, you don't look as angry anymore. And he goes, and you're actually pretty funny. So we kind of chuckled a little bit. And he goes, do you remember how scared you were when you got here? I said, sure. Absolutely. I'll never forget that conversation. I said, absolutely, I remember how scared I was. And he said, well, your job for the rest of the time that you're here is to look for that guy that is scared-less and go make him feel comfortable. At 90 days, I'm like, how? And from that day to this day, I would find people with their back up against the wall because they don't want to be seen. They're hiding in the dark. And I would go over and I'd bring them into the light. And I would force them to just like reveal themselves. And it has been, that has, that has been the greatest gift that I have ever been given in life. Because what I realize is that you can truly know that a change has taken place in an individual when watching the miracle happen in somebody else's life is more important than watching the miracle happen in your life. Because I didn't care really about you when I got here if you weren't going to help me get what I wanted. And so that's what I really like about the 12th step is. The 12th step is the way that the interior flame, the pilot light of AA, stays lit in my life, is by continuing to pass it on to other people. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to, let's see, we're on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are.
I have got in my book here about open mind, living on spiritual principle, anything that's not my idea. And because I came here with a lot of ideas, I still have a lot of old ideas. And they are ones that, you know, keep me sick. I wanted to be honest. I wanted to be courageous. You know, I wanted to be truthful. All these principles that we live by, and I could not live up to them before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, in the book, there's a chapter or a paragraph in there that talks about we could wish to be, you know, all these things, you know, loving, kind, tolerant. And, you know, I just can't bring that to the table, and I still can't today without following a few simple principles and rules, things that I need to do on a daily basis. And for me today, that is my design for living. You know, those 85, 86, 87, 88, reading those pages every day kind of outlines what I need to be looking for in my day. Because left to Leanne, I'll pop up out of bed, still today, you know, not just when I first got here, and be like, I'm on a mission. You know, and I can say it's from God, you know, that I've got these you know, boxes I need to check. And I'll put those 2 feet on the ground and, you know, off and running. And it's like, yeah, I'm brought to my knees at some point during the day. And I was living by that self-propulsion when the book talks about that, you know, on and on and on. Every day I'd wake up and it was, okay, whatever was in here, that's what I thought I was supposed to do. And that's an old idea I came to with the table, and y'all said no. You need to ask, you know, look at your 24 hours and ask God to direct your thinking. So this is all foreign stuff to me. It's a discipline. I'm undisciplined. And I get this much or I get this much. It just depends on what I'm willing to put forth. And you know, when Mickey was talking, you know, today and about how he had a sponsor that taught him how to work with other alcoholics, that wasn't my foundation when I first got here. It's my foundation today. When I mentioned that a little earlier, I didn't do this 12th step for a really long time. I didn't do the steps for a really long time. It was just, you know, I did what I thought would work. And I got into a place at about 7 years of sobriety where my butt was falling off and I didn't know what to do. And I reached out to some women that I had seen when I first came in, and they were still doing this deal and they were working really hard. And I thought, crap, you know, that's what I'm going to have to do. And, you know, and I skimmed by and thank God I didn't get drunk. Because I've got to stay within people. I have to be in a home group. I have to be sponsored in a group of women that are doing this deal. Because if not, I tell myself, I don't have to work so hard. Leanne, you don't have to work so hard. You don't have to go to all those meetings. You know, you don't have to reach out to the newcomer. And what happens is that selfishness and self-centeredness comes back. And Leanne wants to do what Leanne wants to do. And then I'm going to drift away from AA. And when I do that, I get really uncomfortable. I get irritable, restless, and discontent. And it's not been until the last 7 or 8 years. And I've been fighting tooth and nail for a good part of those, saying I still don't want to do this. But I know that my life depends upon it. So you're caught between that rock and a hard place. That's really not so hard. Sometimes it's not uncomfortable. Yeah, sometimes it is uncomfortable. But that's what fills my soul. You know, when I can share with somebody else, you know, this is where I was, this is where I am. It hadn't looked real pretty in between, but I'm sober, and I do have a life today that's beyond what I ever would have thought. You know, and I hear speakers say that all the time, you know, life beyond my wildest dreams, or I would have sold myself short, you know, on anything that my life would have given me, you know, because I would have been forced in that self-propulsion, living on and on. And so I just have to tell, you know, what happened to me and then go through the book and do what the book says. You know, I can't ask them to do anything different than what's written here, because then I'm running on my will and what I think is working and not what Alcoholics Anonymous has done. So I'll pass there.
We got a couple of minutes there, Mickey, if you want to wrap it up.
Okay. I really believe that the way that the book is written is the way that you should definitely, like, walk through the steps. But some of the things, I think some of the things have kind of, like, changed, or people... Like, you can say something really cool in AA, and if it catches on, it's West Coast or it's East Coast. It's like international. You know what I mean? Like, for example, when they say the promises and stuff, at the end of the promises, people would automatically go, work, work, work. You know, you go to the meetings, where work, work, work. Like, drives me crazy. Anyway, the reason I say that is because, I hear people say nowadays, like, well, I can't sponsor anybody because I haven't been through the 12 steps. But I don't agree with that at all. Nowhere in the book that it says that you have to go through the 12 steps in order to sponsor somebody. So, what I was kind of hitting off something that you said is, like, I don't change the way that it is in the book, but I believe that people can develop their own style of spoon-feeding what's in the book to other people.
And one of the ways that we have, that or me or whatever, we have developed is that I always tell my sponsees that, like, once they're, like, up at, like, the four-step and they're doing their four-step, that you can take somebody all the way up to the four-step. You just can't tell them how to do the fifth-step. So you really need to be reaching out and helping somebody. And here's what, and this is the reason that I firmly believe in that. It's because alcoholics have an ego that is, like, huge, right? And if I'm helping somebody, I'm not going to let them pass me. So if I'm walking somebody through the steps and they're catching up on me, I'm going to call my sponsor and further my knowledge, because I can't have that person getting another sponsor. Like, how would I feel if he went around to the meetings and he said I had to get another sponsor because Mickey stopped working the steps, and he would, like, step on, he was stopped on 4 and now I'm on 8. I wouldn't feel real good about that. So, and I swear it's true. So, like, we have the, you know, I get these people started, and then all of a sudden, you know, I say, you really need to get a sponsee. And then they start working the steps together, and then he starts coming to me and, like, we need to hurry up because this guy's catching up on me. Like, there you go. And I swear it works. And, I mean, it's really, like, a lot of people say, well, I can't speak because I don't have a year of sobriety. Like, well, that's not the way that it started. You know, like, I remember when I first got sober, I spoke when I had 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, and a year. Now, and I'm not saying anything about this, you know. I just really believe that if you're willing to do what it, this is what I believe, that if you find somebody that's willing to take you through this book and you do what they do, what they say to do when they say to do it, then you're going to get what they got, which is freedom from alcoholism and a life beyond your wildest dreams. I just want to share this with you. A friend of mine gave me this book that he got from an international conference in 1996. And I had been using this book to take people through the steps. And then all of a sudden I realized that what I wanted to do was I wanted to start documenting the people that I took through the steps. So what I would do is I would write their name down and the date that we started in the beginning. And every time we stopped reading through my book, I would put another date. And what we would do is when we got to the end of the 164 pages, we would look at the dates and we would look at the date that you started and the date that you ended and look at the change that happened in your life, and it was phenomenal. I mean, there's a whole slew, a list of people, and this started in 2007. Like, I wasn't writing that down since 1996, but I mean, it's just like developing your own, like, set of skills to pass the message on to another suffering alcoholic. Thank you for letting me share.
All right. I would like to thank Evan and Mickey.
Yes, thank you, Evan. Thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Evan. All right. We're going to pass the seven tradition back.
You're a lifesaver. I owe you one.
Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. I've got to get my announcement thing out. Simple Actions is having a fantastic supper and a speaker Monday, February the 9th.
Woo!
Woo-hoo! It's going to be fun. For free and for fun. 6 o'clock is the potluck supper. Bring a dish if you wish. And 7 o'clock, Sandy G is coming from Richmond, and she'll be speaking at 7, right here in this room. Any other announcements? Cool. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. All right. And newcomers, this is why we do what we do. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Yes.
Hi, my name is Michael.
of the book, and the Foley literature is free. If you want to buy a book, just see one of the home group members. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, Robbie and Catherine will also be here up here at the table after the meeting. If you want to ask them any questions, feel free to talk to them. Smokers, this is about your butts. Please use the butt can provided outside and stay away from the front door because I know the Boy Scouts were here earlier. Other people are using the church besides us. All meetings are audio recorded and the upcoming events are also posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And if you would like to be included on our email mailing list, please sign up at the literature table or on the website, and we just notify you about any upcoming events. All right, in closing, we're going to thank our panel one more time. Thanks to all who participated, and here's the important part. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the stuff discussed tonight at the meeting, after the meeting, and we go to the lovely International Pancake House, the IHOP, Granby and 21st Street. And they love us there. They treat us good, and we always have a good time. You're open. Robbie, two paragraphs there on 164.
I'm Robbie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Robbie.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you very much. And we'd like to close with the Lord's Prayer.
Here, I like to say,
thank you, man.
Thank you.
Someone's going to have to figure out which road you're going to go down. Take an initiative. Whee! It's like a whiplash.
You do it.
All right. Almost.
All right, let's make a duck.
All right. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Keep.
Hi.
Hey, everyone. That's how I was supposed to.